You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
Choose a breeder that breeds dogs that align with what you would like to do with your dog.
Exactly. If you're a person that wants to go out and do field trials, you're probably not going to go find a breeder that just does a hunt test. You got to find a breeder that does what you do. And even go into depth even more as you get to know those breeders. You want to get a breeder that hunts like you hunt. And it's just going to benefit you when you're out in the field. I'm going to hunt a sharp tail differently than some other person's going to hunt sharp tail. So find a breeder that hunts like you hunt. Do you like a really close hunting dog, or do you like one that ranges out? You'll find those variations in breeds with different breeders. So if you want a bigger running dog, you got to find a breeder that likes that as well. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, because they're not going to produce a close working gun dog, because that's not what they like.
So I just got home from a few days in Dallas with the Pro Plan team, supporting the breeders, owners, enthusiasts, and the organizations that we are all involved in. Pro Plan is a huge supporter of NAVDA, and all awesome NAVDA peeps I know feed and recommend Pro Plan. No other dog food company does that. No other dog food company provides a complete and balanced diet with high palatability and digestibility like Purina Pro Plan. They have over 500 researchers, scientists, and veterinarians on staff, so it's no surprise Pro Plan is the food of choice for 95 out of the top 100 confirmation dogs and 9 out of 10 sporting dogs. That's just the facts, Jack. Boss Shot Shells just came out with their new sticker pack at the Ducks Unlimited Expo a couple weeks ago. In that pack is one of the most useful stickers I've ever seen. It includes a 3-step process on how to pattern your shotgun, all the stats of copper-plated Boss pellets per payload, shotgun bore diameters, difference between bore and choke, and an incredible illustration of each choke with a percentage of pellets in a 30-inch circle at 40 yards. That's a lot of stuff, and it's pretty dang big sticker. So when you order your next box of Boss Shot Shells, be sure to add the sticker pack to your order. Siren shotguns for women. If you're interested in joining us this Saturday, July 17th, we are going to get together, just have some fun, whoever wants to come, at Big Sky Sporting Clays in Polson, Montana. Fun shoot, get together, getting some reps before season starts up in a couple months on one of the most beautiful sporting clay courses. And we'll be meeting up afterwards to grab a bite to eat. I'll have my Siren Elos D2 and the Siren Tempio Light there if you are interested in giving either of them a try. Or if you're interested in some instruction by pros, join me and the Project Upland community in Pine City, Minnesota on August 21st to the 22nd for a weekend of instinctive wing shooting camp. They'll have dog demos, wild game prep tips, learn about all the chokes, ammo, gun cleaning, and we'll be sitting around the campfire at night sharing stories. The Siren shotguns, Caesar Guarini, and Fabarm guns will all be available for you to demo. I'll be there, and I hope you will too. So find out more information by clicking on the events tab on projectupland.com or go to sirenusa.com. Dakota 283. I announced the Dakota 283 giveaway last week, and you guys are rocking it. If you're a Patreon patron and have or will be submitting a rating and review of this podcast, be sure to send me a screenshot so I can get you entered. One person is going to win a medium G3 kennel with Dakota Guard, and another person will win one of the Diamond Dash. I've tried out every kennel on the market before I decided on Dakota 283 several years ago. They are the best, and they keep my dogs safe during travel and when crated at home. Today's episode is about finding the ideal bird dog breeder and some etiquette tips when inquiring to breeders. It's exciting when you finally decided on the ideal bird dog breed for your lifestyle and family. But be patient. Waiting months or even years for the right breeder can save you heartache down the road. Take the time to educate yourself about the importance of health testing, socialization, structure, and fieldability. Know that reputable breeders typically have a lengthy wait list. They have the ability to choose the best homes, not which ones submit the deposit first. They likely have breeding requirements your dog must meet before it's allowed to be bred from. Respect that, and seek out the breeders that not only produce purebred dogs, but well-bred dogs. All right, let's get after it.
In this episode, we are going to talk about choosing a breeder. This is a continuation on from our previous episode on choosing the breed that's right for you. So I want to start it out by saying rescue dogs need homes too, and many of them do make great family dogs and hunting dogs, but I am a strong advocate for responsible dog breeders and purebred dogs. So chances are, if you did work with a responsible dog breeder, or if you go to a rescue or humane society, that dogs in those positions, in a rescue position, are not going to be from a responsible dog breeder, because most breeders that make it a priority to produce dogs in this world also take the same priorities and responsibilities to make sure they're in good homes for life, and or will take them back if the situation changes for that owner. So by doing so, they will microchip the puppies and make them primary owners in their name, so that if that owner would decide to give it up or abandon it, that the breeder is the first one that gets that phone call when the microchip is scanned. Being said that, this episode is going to be all about finding a responsible and ideal breeder for your next puppy. So let's get into that. Choosing a breeder. What is the first thing that you're going to look for? You have decided you want a English setter. What is your first step?
Well, I want to talk about prioritizing your needs. So me, I'm going out to buy a hunting dog. Yes, it's going to be my friend, my pet, my buddy, but I need it to do the job I want it to do. So I'm going to ask the breeder, what do you hunt? That'll answer a few questions for me. Does that breeder even hunt? I'm not going to buy a hunting dog, from a breeder that doesn't even hunt. Not to say that those dogs won't hunt, but I want a breeder that knows its lines and how they work and really good detail about all of that. So I'm going to first ask them, what do you hunt with your dogs?
And how can you determine or prove that they hunt what they say they do? So if you go to their website and it's full of pictures of dogs that are on point, is that credible?
It depends. If you get into good conversations, you're usually going to figure out really quick if they're joshing you or if they're not. You know, if they'll know details, and if you know hunting yourself enough, you're going to know if they've really been out and doing it themselves. And if you have, if I have any questions or red flags go up, I'm probably going to move on. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to stick around and deal with somebody that I don't think is really telling me the truth.
Mm-hmm. And I think even as easy as asking, do you hold a hunting license?
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't hold a hunting license, you're not a hunter. So.
Right. Right. But it is typical. I mean, and I have been fooled by breeders in the past myself, where I'm going to the website, all the dogs are on point, just to come to find out it's like their annual photo session where they go to the local game farm, buy some birds, and take photos of them on point. Yeah. So
just because they're a hunting breed doesn't mean they're actually a hunting kennel.
Right. Right. And this goes in with last episode when we said not all dogs in every breed are created equal. So there's going to be some variations and differences amongst every breed. So even though you may have decided on the German wire hair pointer, this is where we're going to get into the nitty gritty on finding the one that is right for you, and which goes to finding the breeder that is right for you. If you're looking for a testing prospect, are you looking for a personal gun dog? Are you looking for a dog that you're happy to live at home with, but you can also compete on horseback field trials with? All things need to be taken in consideration. And I think, like you just touched on, choose a breeder that breeds dogs that align with what you would like to do with your dog.
Exactly. If you're a person that wants to go out and do field trials, you're probably not going to go find a breeder that just does a hunt test.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, you know, you got to find a breeder that does what you do. And even go into depth even more as you get to know those breeders, find out you want to get a breeder that hunts like you hunt, because they're going to breed a dog that hunts the way you hunt. And it's just going to benefit you when you're out in the field.
Or even more specifically, what about that already hunts the bird species that you want to hunt?
That's exactly true. But even to go into depth, like, I'm going to hunt a sharp tail differently than some other person's going to hunt sharp tail. So find a breeder that hunts like you hunt.
Okay.
Like, do you like a really close hunt working hunting dog, or do you like one that ranges out? You'll find those variations in breeds with different breeders. So if you want a bigger running dog, you got to find a breeder that likes that as well. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, because they're not going to produce a close working gun dog, because that's not what they like.
And this is, you know, a widely talked about in the bird dog industry of that split between breeders that breed for show and breeders that breed for hunting. And while I think it's kind of looked upon as there isn't overlap with those, you will find, if you dig deep enough in each breed, that there are breeders out there that do align the structure just as much, or at least a good majority of the amount that they do with their hunting priorities. And, you know, but I think it goes along the same lines of, if you're looking to have, if your priority to has is to have a top winning show dog that can also be your weekend hunting dog, that's pretty easy to find, I think, amongst the bird dog breeds. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But if you're looking to get real serious of, I want this dog to have potential to be a versatile champion one day, or an AKC dual champion, which is show and field trialing, then that's going to be a whole new caliber of dog. And to really get your best promise in finding a breeder to produce that is going to be one that already has in the past and consistently, which is very tough.
Yeah, fine. If you're looking for a prospect to be a dual champion, you have to find a breeder that's looking for that same thing,
mm-hmm.
that's trying to breed that same dog.
Or not trying, I would say has
bred. Has and trying to repeat that.
Right.
And same thing in, let's say, NAVDA is that organization, is those dogs are bred a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bred to be able to be very truly versatile. So if you're looking for a dog that's to do NAVDA with, you have to find a breeder that is breeding specifically for those reasons. And typically in those aspects, they're also hunters themselves. So that's going to align with you as well. But if you really want to get specific on certain things, you need to find a breeder that aligns exactly with what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to put your wishing well out there and to the breeders of what it is exactly you want to look for or what you would like in your puppy, so they have a good idea of it. And I think of the one person that came to us that said, I want a NAVDA VC, I want a dual champion master hunter. And we're like, whew, that's a lot. We have only one of those. I think we have the only one in the breed to date. But she had already put a deposit down with another breeder that told her that she would be able to produce that for her. But, never had actually produced any of those. So you need to do your research on the breeder just as much as, even though they might tell you they're doing that, research into it. And it's going to be the same throughout this lineup here that we're going through, that not only what you're being told, make sure it's true. Do your homework on all of it. Because there are some that are just anxious to get a puppy in your hands, especially if you're saying you're going to give that puppy the potential to do all these things that are going to make a good name of their kennel as a breeder. So give yourself the best chance and find the breeder that has already done this stuff, because there might be many that have dogs with those titles, but have they sent them out to trainers? And if so, how are they going to be able to mentor you through that? How are they going to be able to honestly evaluate the strengths and the weaknesses in the dogs they're producing if they've never actually trained them themselves?
Or done it themselves, exactly. It's a big component to it.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I just talked a little bit about the show portion of it, and I don't want that to be a distraction either. If you see a dog that has show champions on in the front of the name, and I feel like a lot of people I talk to, that does make them a little iffy because they think, oh, it's a show kennel. Well, not necessarily. And for us personally, for a long time, it's been a requirement in order to breed a dog from us or our personal one before we breed dogs that they have achieved that AKC show champion, an advanced field title, and that they're chick health tested. So in our mind, that is the dog that has proven itself. And I look at a system like NAVDA, where it's a fantastic testing system of abilities, but they do not have a breed standard. So you can have German wire hair pointers without any furnishings. You could have tricolor German short hair pointers. You can have dogs that have very straight angles, that have roachy top lines, that a lot of different major structural issues can happen because there was no emphasis put on that breed standard, which gives those characteristics of the breed. And instead of giving priority with that, they're being bred. They could be. There's a potential to be specifically bred for performance, not breed preferences.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
Did I say that right? And the importance of structure comes down to, straighter angled in the rear, straighter in the front. The dog's going to be not working as efficiently as it should be and could be more apt to get blow their cruciates because they're not put together right. They'll tire faster because they're putting too much effort into their movement or won't last all day, won't last as long in a hunt because they've exerted themselves so much more than if they were structurally sound.
And they could have that performance factor of, it's great in the field and its heart is through the roof and it'll push through those things, but it's pushing through those things and damaging itself in the long run. So structures has its place and, mm-hmm. and it's in its important place, and it's sometimes, a lot of times, it's overlooked, especially in hunting kennels. They put more emphasis on that field ability. So finding that even mix isn't easy to do. But if you do your research and you look around and ask the right questions, you can find those diamonds in the rough is what you'd mm-hmm. I guess you could call them.
Or even educate yourself on it. I mean, most sporting breeds, except for the Spinoni, should have a level top line. There's things that you can educate yourselves on and be able to understand some basics of structure, but even other breed characteristics like coat type, the German wire hair pointer, right in the standard, to be of correct breed type, it needs to have a correct coat. And the purpose of that is for the harshness, that dual coat, for repelling water, to provide coverage. There's reasons behind it. So don't neglect the importance of a breeder that breeds for a breed standard.
If it don't look like the dog you're looking at, it's probably not right. So they should really, really look like the breed.
Mm-hmm. And, a friend recently bought a wire-haired Vizsla puppy. And at 8 weeks old, that puppy has 2 inches of coat hanging off of it already. And it's very, very open, very soft. And, you know, for her to be hunting in Wisconsin for that type of cover, it's going to be hard. That dog's going to be scratched up. It's going to be full of burrs. And now it's going to require her to do a lot of coat maintenance beforehand and clean up afterwards. So that stuff's important. And for you to be able to recognize that is going to help you finding a breeder that can consistently produce those correct characteristics.
That's the thing. It's consistently produce that. So that's big for me, especially with hunting. You know, they're consistently putting a dog together and consistently putting litters together that are performing at the levels you want and look the way you want them to look. I mean, it's not just a one-off here or there. It's consistency is really important. It means that they're really putting together the right genetics and keeping true to form.
Mm-hmm. Health testing. That is another biggie to look at when searching for a breeder. So I think many don't know about this, but if you go to OFA.org, you can find any dog that has been health tested and goes on record. You can put in the dog's registered name right there and find out the health tests that have been done for it. So you go to a breeder's website and you see the name of the sire and the dam that have just been bred. Or if you're researching for a future litter, type in some of those dogs' names that are on that website and it'll pull up the health test results of it. And that'll give you a good idea if that breeder is dedicated to producing healthy dogs. And I think, you know, with us having some stud dogs, we get inquiries of, I have a female, I would like to use your dog. And so we start out, all right, well, tell me about her and what kind of health testing does she have? And so many times, and this is crazy, but so many more times than not, people will say, she was just at the vet recently and they said she was healthy and looking good.
So
she's good to go. Okay. Well, that's not a health test. And so you need to have those conversations too with the breeder. There's OFA hip certification. There's Penn Hip, which is another certification for hips. And these sporting dogs, in every breed of sporting dog, hip x-rays should be done. These are working dogs. They need to have healthy hips that can last all day, not get arthritis, and not break down. And that's a very heartbreaking thing for people that have to go through that. Those 2 or 3 year old dogs that now have hip dysplasia, it's tough. You need to make decisions. Hip replacement, money, put the dog down, what is going to be best for the animal. Those are hard decisions that you don't need to make. And while you can still get health issues from 2 parents that are completely health tested, it happens, but you're helping lower the chances of getting an unhealthy dog by maximizing on those health tests that are already complete. It's less likely to happen. on the OFA website, OFA Chick, and it lists every breed on there that has a chick database. So it's a how that happens is the parent club of every breed goes through and determines what health issues need to be tested in that breed.
So they put together a list basically of what that breed should be tested for.
Required and recommended.
So to get a chick number, they have to go through each one of those tests and they have to complete each one of those tests. But saying that, it doesn't mean they have to pass. So just because they have a chick number doesn't mean they're still a healthy dog. It just means that they went through all the steps to of all the tests. So you still have to go back and research that chick number and see what the results were.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good point. Another part of that. So a couple of things that you can look for is red flags. If you're typing in that breeder's dogs into the OFA system, you're seeing that they have a bunch of chick dogs registered with them. But if they have, like for German wire hair pointers, it's required to have hips, elbows, eyes, and heart, and thyroid all completed, and that's what we need to be healthy to breed from. So if you have dogs in there that are hips, elbows, eyes, and cardiac, but they're missing the thyroid, ask questions. Ask why. Why didn't you thyroid test? Did you thyroid test? Because a breeder or the owner of the dog has the option to opt on that OFA form when they send it in to not have abnormal results published. And that is quite common. So know that even though that's blank, it looks like it hasn't been done, it's possible that that health test was done, but just came back with abnormal results. Also important to add in here is that dogs with abnormal results, take that on a case-to-case basis. If that dog is from a family of dogs that have generations of good, excellent hips in their pedigree, and all of a sudden this one comes back fair, that's how genetics work sometimes. You don't always have the luck of the draw, but that breeder may have decided there's enough good in here that I'm not too concerned about those fair hips being bred from because everybody else in the family has good or excellent hips. And recently it kind of opened up my eyes with the more rare breeds like the Bracco Italiano. If their hips come back moderate or mild dysplasia and they're being bred from, you know, ask that breeder why they're breeding it. Find out maybe what's more behind it. Some of us will write that off of, nope, don't want to deal with any prospect of bad hips in there at all. I'm all done. I'm going to continue searching.
And that's okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like gambling, you know, you take a dog out of a dog that has fair, mild dysplasia hips, there's a higher chance that you may get one out of there. But you could get one out of two excellent parents as well, but the odds are lower.
Right. Let's talk about a little bit about etiquette. So now that we decided on the breed that we want and we've narrowed it down to maybe 5 or 10 different breeders that align with exactly what we're looking for, their health test in their dogs, their training and their testing, their dogs are doing really well. When we make that first contact, how do you like that? What do you like that to look like?
What do I like it to look like or what do I not like it to look like? I like when somebody calls me up and has done their research. They know who we are, what our dogs are like, and have a good understanding of what we're doing. I mean, it's all out there on the websites pretty much. So if you're just looking for a dog and calling people up, it's very obvious as a breeder to know that that's what you're doing. And really, if you're not invested off the start with me, I have a hard time being invested in you. I have typically breeders, especially good breeders that are breeding quality dogs, have a lot of people wanting their puppies. They can pick and choose mm-hmm. who they send their puppies to. So to be honest, you have to do your research. I'm not just a commodity. I'm not just selling a product.
You're not desperate to get rid of puppies.
Exactly. I don't have a problem getting rid of puppies, and good breeders don't. If you call somebody up and say, hey, I want a puppy and how much, and they say, and they're happy to get rid of a puppy, it's probably not a great breeder. But if somebody calls me up and asks me, do you have any puppies and how much, I really have a hard time even that conversation in my mind is done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have... You may be a great person, but first impressions mean a lot to a good breeder.
Right. And they may have had good intentions. They just don't know what to ask or how to ask. And and I think as breeders, we try to work around that conversation too to see really what their intentions are. But it is a initial offset.
Yeah. So, I would have a hard time calling you back if you left a message like that.
Do you have puppies right now? Are they available now and how much?
Yeah.
And that is, it's so common. And I think a better initial way to go about it would be, hey, I've been on your website. I see that, you know, you have some good looking dogs. They look talented. I like what you guys are doing there. Could you tell me a little bit about your future breeding plans?
Yeah.
What would you like to hear from them? What are some good questions to ask of that breeder in that first initial phone conversation?
You hit it right on the head there of how you started that out. I mean, if somebody comes and answers the phone like that, I'm intrigued. I'm ready. Most breeders love to talk, especially about dogs, especially their dogs. And if you have a true, honest interest in that, it'll really show. So to start out right away is have some interest in what the breeder's doing and ask some questions of, you know, maybe I were on your website and I saw this girl, she's done a lot. When do you plan to breed her? And that could open up a whole different conversation. That may open up a litter that a breeder wouldn't even advertise. And maybe you would get in on something that you would never get in on if you wouldn't have asked those certain questions. Because there are some litters that we produce that we don't
need to advertise.
We don't need to advertise them because we have dogs, waiting lists. We have waiting lists and they'll go into the right hands. But if, you know, if you perk my interest or the breeder's interest in, hey, I really... I've been following this girl. I looked at her and you do your research. You know, it may open up a door to a caliber of dog that you may not have been able to get your hands on.
Mm-hmm. And know too that for breeders, it's liability to have a lot of information out there on your website, on social media of how many dogs you own, what you're doing with them, and, information on even where you live, because there are so many anti-breeders out there right now that the less information we put out there, the better. So know that there's that security. But if you can find contact information for that breeder, that's going to be the best way to hit off that conversation and get your foot in the door. I think, like with us, I could say we receive probably 10 inquiries a week. And we're not even breeding this year. We haven't even advertised a litter for a long, long time. But we still get a lot of inquiries, and it gets to be overwhelming. And to those listening that have inquired, you know how like the relay time is for it. We try to get to all the inquiries, but it gets overwhelming. And I guess what we immediately do, and even after a phone conversation, how we are able to try to weed through those that are serious or those that are just shopping for a puppy to get next week and or at the cheapest dollar amount they could find. We have a 6-page questionnaire, and I can say out of those 10 inquiries a week, we probably get 10% back that actually take the time to fill out the questionnaire. So,
yeah, I would say that's, you know, sometimes there's work behind this, and there's work behind it for a reason, to just wean out, you know, the bad apples off the bat. And that's what a lot of breeders would do.
Mm-hmm.
So be prepared to jump through some hoops if you got your head set on a good kennel. I mean, you know, I've really heard great things about this. I've seen dogs from that kennel, and I mean, that's what I want. You may have to jump through some hoops. You may have to do some testing of those puppies that you may have not have done if you would have bought it from somebody else.
But going to that, so like, because these are things to expect from when you find a good breeder, an ideal breeder, is that the testing that you just mentioned. So like NAVDA testing or German system testing. Mm-hmm. There are some specific breeds like the Drothar. If you want to get a puppy or breed from it even someday, or have potential to want to breed to it someday, breeders may require that they first prove themselves, or even just the NAVDA natural ability test. Know that when puppies leave our houses at 8 weeks old, we may never see them again. So the fact that they are tested some point before 16 months old in that natural ability test, they're assessed on all the different things. This would be a good place for you. What are some of the important things that are tested in the NAVDA natural ability test that are important for us to know as breeders?
If we send a puppy out and somebody's working it and training it itself, if they go through the test, no matter how it scores, you know, first of all, that test in my mind is going to get that person active. So right away when I'm giving you that puppy, I know that you have to run it in a test. So you have a goal in mind. And most people, when they have that, they're going to spend some quality time with that puppy. They're going to make sure it gets to where it needs to go. You're going to put some time into it. And that natural ability test is going to show natural. It is kind of what it is. It's a natural ability test. There is training behind it, but you're really bringing out that natural genetics of that puppy. So as a breeder, it's showing me what we created really in a number, really. And we can break that number down into categories, but it's telling me as a whole is how that puppy genetically came forward. Mm-hmm. So it's going to show us what kind of pointing skills it has, how its nose was doing. It's going to show us any holes that we may have created. Water work. It has ability to go in the water. Did it have some tendencies and not want to go in water? Did it have some tendencies and not want to run and search the field correctly? Some of that's training, but a lot of that's natural. Tracking. I mean, it could have had a bad day, but it comes down to some of the notes and stuff that you're going to get back. And then you follow back with that number and the score that you saw as a breeder, and then you can go back and you can talk to the owner as well, and get, you know, sometimes those numbers don't reflect on what really happened, but it gives us kind of a roadmap of how we did as breeders, mm-hmm. as
the
a whole.
Coats, the bites,
yep.
Testicles,
yeah.
Oh, that's important because bites might be great at 8 weeks old, but they can go off anytime before 16 months old, or vice versa. If it, you know, if they leave here with a bad bite, then it comes back on. So all those things are really telltale and help us make decisions in the breeding program going forward.
Yeah. And if, you know, I mean, it won't have anything to do with how the dog hunts in the future, but it gives us the information of, you know, that didn't mix well.
Mm-hmm.
If we had five puppies and four of them or three of them came back with bad bites, it's probably not a good mix, and something isn't meshing well there. So that just gives us information that we would have never saw. Mm-hmm. So those kind of things it's getting more popular to have breeders have their whole litters have to be tested. You know, some are still doing, you know, we want you to do this. And a lot of them are moving towards, you have to.
And don't let that be a turnoff, you know, when you're searching. when you're searching for a breeder, don't let it be a turnoff that they are going to require you to do a natural ability test, because you know, you might be like, well, I just want a hunting dog. I just want a family dog. I don't want to do testing. I'm not interested in that. But the cool thing is, and the biggest incentive for you to take advantage of that, even if your breeder doesn't require it, do it, because you are going to be surrounding yourself by an amazing community of people that just want to get out there and train their dogs on the weekends they have available, and will be nothing but an incredible resource for you to ask questions and move forward with the progress of your puppy being a better bird dog.
Yeah, most of those organizations have equipment that you don't have to purchase. They're setting up training days. You're going to be able to work with people that are like-minded and working towards the same goal. And everything that you do from start to the NA test, is everything you'd want to do with your hunting dog anyways. Mm-hmm. It's going to prepare yourself for that first hunting season anyways. And it's just going to be easier for you because you have people to bounce ideas off. You're going to have people to help you. You're going to have people that resource birds and all the stuff that's not easy to do. It just makes things easier. And that's another reason why we tell our puppy buyers that they need to do that. It just makes them do it. And you're going to have a good experience when you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. And I think what I really love is, you know, people that may have been hesitant about getting a puppy because of the strings of, or the commitment of having to test them, are now people that are running their dogs at the NAVDA Invitational trying to get a VC. So they may have initially had no intentions of testing at all or training to that level, but as you progress, you get more of a bond with your dog. You see them progressing, and so it makes you want to go along with them, and your hunting experience in general is just better overall.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
Yeah. Other things to expect that a breeder may ask of you. I mean, besides, like you mentioned earlier, knowing that there's going to be a wait list, and if you're thinking about, you know, your current dog's getting older right now, you might want to get set for another 2 or 3 years and get put on a waiting list for that time period.
When people call me and they're like, well, do you have a waiting list and where would I be on the list? And yes, we always have people waiting, but I always tell people, I'm like, yes, we have a waiting list, but I always put my puppies in the best homes possible. Mm-hmm. I'm basically putting that ball in your court saying, you know, what makes me want to give you a puppy?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
rather than
I'm
vice
basically
versa.
Saying mm-hmm. I'm put my puppies in the best homes possible. Now, what makes you the best home?
Right. And you're already coming to us of what makes you the best breeder. You know, you came to us first asking that of us, and now we're going, well, what makes you one of the best owners that should get a puppy from us?
Because mm-hmm. I want my puppies in the best possible hands. And I know that I'm never going to get that puppy back. It's always going to be in good care. It's going to have a happy life hunting, doing what it's bred for. I want to leave that transaction with no worries.
And don't think that the best owner is the one that wants to do all the testing and all the all the competitions out there, because it's not. I like our puppies to go to the homes that just want a personal gun dog, that they'll do the natural ability test, and they're going to provide an amazing life for that dog. I think we've found more times than not when we send them to homes that have these really high expectations, they set them too high. And they're the ones that I think would be more to dispose of the dog than those that just want a family dog. Personal gun dog.
Well, in hopes, that's what we do to try to wean those kind of people out. When you buy a dog from a breeder, you're buying the dog for life.
We hope.
We hope.
That's the intention.
Yeah.
Yep. They and being said that, they might ask that you know, the dog is living in the house. They might ask that the dog has a fenced-in yard. Things like that are also what to expect, but also structured. So crate training, very key. I don't like puppies going into homes with no structure because they turn into bad puppies and bad dogs.
Very true.
Don't just say what you think breeders want to hear. Tell them the truth. And if they don't have what they think is going to be best for you, they're going to be able to point you in the direction of another breeder that would. So just say exactly what you're looking for. The spay neuter. That's another thing that breeders might request of you. If you go to a breeder not having intentions of wanting to breed yourself one day, they may have you agree to having your dog spay or neutered. Typically, they have you wait till around 16 months old, just knowing all the research that's out there that dogs live more structurally sound and longer, healthier lives when they're spay neutered around that age, not earlier, like it used to be generally. That was another episode I already covered.
So go back and listen to that.
Yeah. But so that could be an agreement. Like I said earlier, we before dogs from us are bred from, we have the owners first prove that it's worthy of being bred from. Health test, AKC show champion, that used to be a thing. We've dropped that. But advanced field title, a dog that has proven that it has the grit and ability to be cooperative and trainable. It says a lot in what you have going forward.
It gives you a baseline that the dog's able to take pressure. It's able to take that next step that a lot of dogs never do and may never know. So it proves a point that the dog can handle that level of training and is capable of doing it. Title doesn't make a dog great. It just gives you a baseline of that dog can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are dogs out there that have been trying to do it for years and just can't do it. So what does that tell you about that dog and that line of dogs? So those tests have a point.
Something else to expect. It used to be really common of send in your deposit, and that puts you at whatever number it is on the waiting list to get a puppy. That's not typical. And the breeders have been living with the dogs for 8 weeks. The more specific you can be in your questionnaire and your conversations with the breeder to let them know exactly what you're looking for, what your lifestyle is like, how often you hunt, where you hunt, they're going to have the best knowledge to choose which puppy in that litter is going to be best aligned with you because they've raised several litters. They know how they turn out. They're very familiar with the line that they're breeding. And so don't let that be a setback that you don't get to choose what puppy you want, because you might go visit that litter of puppies and the one that continues to run over by you, or the one that's, you know, laying underneath the chair away from everybody, that might be the one you choose. But there's nothing worse than having an alpha puppy put into the hands of a novice person, not knowing how to control that situation.
Yeah, if you're looking at for a laid back puppy and that puppy was just having a nap at that time, you're like, oh, it's just a laid back, that might be the craziest one in the litter. And if the if you don't talk to the breeder, the breeder spends so much time with these puppies,
mm-hmm.
every day, all day. They're watching and looking at these puppies all the time. So they know a lot of their personality and how consistent that personality really is. That brings me back to another question to ask a breeder is like, are you keeping a puppy out of that litter?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that tells me a lot too of, you know, what do you think of the litter? Are you keeping one? You know, and some of the people are like, yeah, I'm keeping three. I'm like, ooh, and that gets me excited.
Right, you know? Right.
Or are they just producing a litter to just sell them? Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't really make me excited as a puppy buyer. You know, and you're like, you're not even keeping one? Why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what? First of all, why are you breeding that litter? And second of all, you must not think highly of it if you're not going to keep a puppy out of it. Mm-hmm. So what does that make me feel? So that's a good question too. It just kind of popped in my head.
Yeah. So, and we can get into that, because it was in What to Expect of the breeder might be keeping 1 to 2 puppies. And a lot of times you'll find, let's just say that responsible breeder mentality, they are only breeding when they want something from that litter themselves, or else why are you breeding?
Yeah.
What was the purpose of that? Just to put more fantastic dogs on the ground? If it was fantastic, why aren't you keeping one? So yeah, interesting conversation. But you know, when you get beyond that phone call, that questionnaire, and you and the breeder decide you guys have aligned and you think that you guys would be a good match, go visit the breeder. And that is going to be another incredibly important aspect of this, because you can see everything in writing, you can see everything on the computer, but to be there in person is really what tells the tale. Do you and the breeder have good communication? Do you know, you feel each other out when you're in person? Have the breeder show you every single dog they have in that house or in that kennel, because your puppy is most likely going to have very similar characteristics of every dog there. Are the dogs growling and biting at you through the kennels? Are they really excited to see you? Or, you know, get your hands on their coats, especially for wire hair people. We looking for puppies. We tell everybody that all the time. Go there and meet them. Get your hands on their coats. Is this what you had in mind? Is this what's ideal?
Is it consistent through the kennel?
Is it consistent, right?
And you know, you ask those questions to the beginning, you'll find your red flags right away. Is the person not able to let you come over? Is there always an excuse that you can't come over? I mean, if you don't go and meet them at their place and see their kennel before you get a puppy from them, or even like some, I've heard stories of people that pick them up on the side of the road. Like they'll
meet them in a parking lot.
Deliver them. That's mm-hmm. a huge red flag for me.
Right.
So, you know, you have to be able to make those trips, go check them out, go meet them. Let me see them work. Mm-hmm. Let me see the parents work. Do you have both parents? Will you give me information from the stud dog? Can I call them up and get information from the stud dog and that breeder or that owner? And if they can't give you that information, it's not a good sign.
And seeing the dogs work.
Yeah. If a person can't show you the dog work, I mean, if it's just out on a pigeon or something, you know, that tells you a lot right there, you know. Or, you know, some breeders would be like, yeah, come on out. We're going on a hunt, you know, this, come on out, come shoot some birds over this dog. That's going to show you a lot. And if they can't do that for you, that's not a good sign.
Mm-hmm. And even us as breeders, before we even use a stud dog, I think every stud dog to date, except for the very first litter we had, we have either personally hunted or been on horseback watching them work. To be able to know what you're going to get and or spend time with the offspring of that stud dog has always been really important to us. And even when someone was bringing to one of our dogs, he flew out to meet you at a NABDA test or a hunt test, just to watch.
Oh, a field trial.
Yeah, just to watch the, you know, some of the dogs work before he decided which one he really wanted to use, and mm-hmm. Got his hands on them, got to see them. And at some of the events, you know, we've had people kind of, can I take him and go walk him around? You know, just, I mean, not that we want people to take our dogs anywhere, but that's intentional. That's stuff that we like to see.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, get as in depth as you can. And when you're with the breeder, that's a good time to ask more of the questions rather than that initial phone conversation, because now you know you're in the playing field and the breeders okayed you to be able to come to your house. Because the first, you know, if we get a phone call and, hey, I live in your area, or I'm driving through the area, I want to come over and meet your dogs before I get a puppy from you. Well, you haven't even passed our cross examination yet. So I don't know what your intentions are. So I'm not going to invite you over until you've gone through all that stuff, because it is a lot to go through and to agree to.
But with that said, it shows that you're still interested. It shows, you know, don't be afraid to call those breeders, not just once, but call them a few times, you know, get to know them. And some breeders won't even take you seriously until mm-hmm. you speak to them three times.
Right.
You know, it's like, how serious are you? You know, okay, you've called me twice. You're okay. I'm going to put you over here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you said, it's good breeders don't have a problem getting rid of puppies. They want to find that good home, mm-hmm. that the best home they can.
More questions for you to ask of the breeder. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about what bird species do you hunt? That'll be a good one. Why are you doing this mating? What are you hoping to get out of it? What are some of the weaker traits that you're hoping to improve on? What is it that you're consistently producing?
Yeah, if a breeder can't tell you its weaknesses, that's typically a bad thing, you know, because you know, not all dogs are perfect. They all have something, you know, that they're trying to improve.
That's the purpose of breeding, exactly. Is to improve on something. Well, it should be, but...
Or, you know, even you know, I really like this dog, and this dog's very similar. I want to try to produce this same dog, mm-hmm. or even better. That's kind of what you want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Do you have kids? Do the dogs live in the house with you? Do they... there's lots of questions to ask that to make sure that it's an intentional breeding that aligns with what you're hoping to get.
Yeah.
Were there any other questions?
Oh, I think you got most of them there.
Okay. And we've even had, sometimes puppies, you know, you find a breeder, like I said, we usually keep 1 to 2 puppies from our litters. So that means what we're doing is we know that this was a litter of a lot of potential. So we don't want to put all of our eggs in one basket and hope that that one is going to turn out to be our next prospective breeding dog. So we're going to keep a couple of them, raise them up, and maybe just choose one or the other, which one we liked best, and then let one go as a started or a finished dog. Or we might keep both of them, like we just did, that you're just like, yeah, this definitely produced what we were hoping to get from it. And so now we're going to keep both of them. But that's another important aspect in finding a breeder.
Goes back to why are you doing this breeding, mm-hmm. you know, or asking that question, are you keeping one?
Right. And even if you aren't, if a puppy isn't necessarily the situation that you want to be in, that breeder might have that started or finished dog coming up. Like we haven't advertised ours. We had a couple of them that we're putting into homes that they're already trained because they just aren't exactly what we want as a prospect for future breeding.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they're a bad dog. That just means
that they're one of the best dogs, really.
It just didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a great pickup that you might not have had, you know, if you're willing to do that route. Sometimes, you know, you want a puppy and you want to do it all yourself, and that's great mm-hmm. too. That's an awesome experience. But sometimes, you know, if you're, you know, it's something to ask, you know, do you have any started ones, you know? Because sometimes it'd be like, yeah, I had kept a few, and I think sometimes they may spark something that I'm like, they didn't even know they were going to sell it until like, well, maybe I should let that one go. And that might be dog.
Yeah.
That might have just pushed him right over the ledge.
To be able to put him in your great home that you'd provide for him.
Yeah.
And we've even, a couple times that we're doing it right now, we're raising, we raise puppies for other people. So they might have even bought it from another breeder, but they know that here they're not only going to get some training, but they're also going to get the exposure to loud, crazy toddlers and how to live with multi-dog households. You know, we're not going to have
any of those issues.
Right. That, you know. Well, they can't do that themselves because they're busy. And we enjoy raising puppies. It's
fun.
Yeah. And the kids enjoy it too. It's going to be hard to see her go. We have a really good one. And right now we're raising, but yeah, when she's 9 months old, the owner, even though he hasn't met her yet, when we got her at 8 weeks old, at 9 months old, she's going to be ready to rock and hunt for him, completely trained, housebroken, super temperament.
She's coming out to Montana to pick her up and hunting her right away.
Yeah. So, and he, you know, he knew he didn't have the time to be able to commit to her as a baby puppy.
Yep.
And so it'll be good. Be sad to see her go, but that's part of it for us. Right. And know that most breeders want to see you and your dog succeed. So, you know, they might get it from a trainer or a breeder that also does training of their own, whether it's professionally or just, you know, themselves as an amateur. You can utilize them, be a lifetime mentor. They should always be there to mentor you, give you training tips. Most likely, if you're having an issue somewhere along your training, you just don't know how to overcome it, chances are the breeder has already been through that and can talk you through it and how it works. They probably offer some discount training. I know we do free one-on-ones when owners of our dogs come over here because we just want to see them progress. And when you have a happy owner, you have a happy dog.
Yeah, I want to make sure that puppy's on the right track. So, you know, most breeders are the same way. You know, they want their puppies to succeed. They want them to be happy. They want them to be all they can be. So they're gonna do everything they can, you know, physically can do for you and that puppy to make sure that you're happy with it and that it's on the right foot. So, you know, having that relationship with your breeder is huge. You got to find a breeder that is willing to have that relationship with you. They're not just selling a puppy to you. You're buying part of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, once you buy that puppy, you are now part of my family. So we're always here to help any way we can. So that's another thing to really think about when you're looking for breeders is you have to have a breeder that's able and willing and has the experience to do that for you. It's just going to help you out in the long run.
You're always going to have that relationship and the ability to just reach out and ask them anything at any time. So, yeah. But know that that's most likely what you're going to get into. And getting a puppy from a breeder that, you know, charges, you might feel like, oh, well, that breeder has all these VCs and dual champions and they do all this. They're going to be really expensive. Well, I can tell you, literally the neighbor down the road sells the puppies for the same price we do, that there's no health testing, there's no ability testing of any sorts. And you're probably, you know, way off if you think that somebody is going to charge more just because they have more accomplishments, because everybody's charging the same amount for the dog.
Typically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Typically, around the same range. And to be honest, even if there's a $500 versus $3,000 difference, you are increasing your chances of having that much more of a healthier, proven working dog that's going to be able to live longer, healthier for a longer time.
Yeah, sorry I laughed there, but I'm like, that initial purchase price of that puppy is probably the cheapest thing
right
that you'll spend when you buy that puppy, especially if you're just getting into it. Because when you get into it, you buy the puppy, and then you got all the food, and you got all the
veterinary
toys,
expenses,
and you got all the new guns,
birds,
and all the new trucks, and all the new everything. It just
new setups.
So that first initial price of that puppy really, really isn't bad when you look at everything else that comes behind that.
Yeah. Well, we have Prim snoring in the background.
It must be a boring topic for her.
Yeah.
She's been snoring for a while.
Has she?
Yeah.
I just caught it now. All right. Good?
Good.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share it and tag me and someone that would benefit from listening. And hey, help a girl out by giving the podcast a rating and review on whichever platform you're listening from. Send me a screenshot of your review and I'll mail you out a Bird Dog Babe sticker. Be sure to join me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you're interested in some Bird Dog Babe swag or gear that I rely on, be sure to check out the store on thebirddogbabe.com. And most importantly, don't forget to support the sponsors of this podcast and the organizations that are working hard to conserve the birds you're chasing after and the public lands in which you hunt.